The Buffalo News Ice Time podcast is brought to you by Express Windows. Windows starting at $359 installed. Visit expresswindowsinc.com.
Welcome to Ice Time, the Buffalo News' hockey podcast. I'm Lance Lasowski, Sabres beat writer for the Buffalo News, joined as always by Mike Harrington. Only one more game to go, Mike.
You know, I want to say it's gone fast. And then at the same time, you think of all the trips we've made and the miles we've covered, and it hasn't gone fast. And more importantly, the slog of this season in terms of wins and losses and the lack of playoff race games to cover. It's been a very unique and different season, but ultimately another disappointment with that drought up to 14 years.
Yeah, to me, at least personally, I think that the 13-game winless streak, that sort of stretch dragged quite a bit. January dragged quite a bit. It's flown by after that, but it's been interesting to see not only the trade deadline, but you know they found some consistency there for a few weeks, and now as we talk here today, Wednesday afternoon, they've dropped four in a row, shut out by the Leafs, allowed seven goals in Tampa, loss in a shootout to the Panthers when quite a few of their top guys were missing or being rested, they're getting rest or injured, losing load Columbus.
Management. Load management hits the NHL.
Yeah, it looks like that's going to be the norm. The Hurricanes and Canadians play tonight. I saw how many guys are missing from the Hurricanes morning skate, and that's a bummer, but hey, that's something that we have to worry about. It's been really, you look at the landscape around the league, the Leafs clinching the division on Tuesday night and the Canadians in position as we talk here right now to get back into the playoffs. This was a golden opportunity for the Sabres this season. The Rangers missed the playoffs. The Bruins missed the playoffs. The Penguins missed the playoffs. The Islanders missed the playoffs.
Right.
Detroit didn't take that next step, yet here we are. Still talking about the Sabres and how they're going to fix this.
And we have talked for multiple seasons about how are the Sabres going to crack the top of the Atlantic Division? Well, maybe they're not, but how do they crack the wild cards? They're going to need teams to take a step back. And we had always pointed at the Boston Bruins, and they finally did take that step back this year. But could you have imagined in the same year, the Bruins don't make it, the Penguins don't make it, the Rangers go from President's Trophy winners to out of the playoffs entirely. The Islanders, who seem to sneak in every year, finally don't make it. So there's plenty of openings there. And who jumps in? Ottawa and Montreal, and not the Buffalo Sabres. So, yes, it's a big missed opportunity because you can't expect all these teams to fall back at the same time again next year. Somebody's going to take a step up, you would assume, and figure it out. The Rangers may fire Laviolette and get a new coach in there with all the talent they have. They might be the Rangers again in relatively short order. So that's a big disappointment here for me. And the other thing is you could sense the Sabres were in position. They were third in the Atlantic Division at Thanksgiving. Their top players all had excellent years. They just didn't get the job done, mostly on the road. They didn't get the job done in goal. They didn't get the job done on defense. And those topics have been kind of beaten to death, but they just continue to be the overriding themes of the season.
I think it's very fair to bring them up again, though. When you look at as we the finale is Thursday, all the locker cleanout stuff is Friday, Saturday. And I think back to a year ago where the messaging coming from Kevin Adams and the players was, well, if we fix our starts and our power play and we get some accountability with structure, they thought that they were going to have a really good chance to break this thing and get into the playoffs. Well, what are going to be the talking points this time around? You got your structure and accountability with Lindy Ruff, but the team defense, they're 23rd in the league in goals against per game as we sit here today, Mike. The power play didn't get fixed. The penalty kill this penalty kill got worse this season. So it's going to be a very interesting conversation to hear. Lindy Ruff in particular, he's mentioned a few areas that he wants to fix, but with him coming back as coach, where are the main points that he wants to shore up to make sure that this doesn't happen again?
He's got to shore up special teams. He didn't fix the power play. He fixed the starts.
Yeah.
He fixed accountability. There was a lot more defensive structure. There was poor defensive play within that structure. I mean, when Matias Samuelsson and Owen Power are in the right position in front of the net and just don't guard the guy who's there to bang home the rebound. That's not a problem of structure. That's a problem of execution. It was interesting to me how this team over the course of the season really did collapse on the road quite a bit. Given 2 years ago, they missed the playoffs by a point. They won 25 games on the road. A lot of these same guys, 2 years younger, won 25 games on the road, the most for any team that didn't qualify since 2016. And now this year, they go on the road, and they really are an abject disaster at times. They go 13-24-4. They're 28th in the league in points percentage on the road. I looked at a couple numbers today, Lance. It's unbelievable. Their goals against on the road is 3.76, tied for 30th in the league. They're 30th in shots for. They were only 8th in shots against. Here's some numbers for you. Lukanen is consistent. He had an 886 save percentage at home this year. He had an 887 on the road. But when they played Reimer or Levi on the road, they went 4-13-1.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Levi had a 463 on the road with an 867 save percentage. Reimer was at 316 at 893. And some of their players have wild home road splits. Tage Thompson is one of the wildest ones. You know, Tage Thompson leads the NHL this year in home goals. He has 29 goals at home. He's 3 ahead of David Pastrnak. He had 15 at home. He was plus 11 rating-wise at home. He was minus 11 on the road. J.J. Paterka, plus 9 at home, minus 12 on the road. Here's another one for you. Owen Power, 25 points at home with a plus 9 rating. On the road, Owen Power, 15 points with a minus 22 rating. Minus 22 on the road. You can't survive with your top players having that kind of disparate performances, and they really have. I mean, we needed to see more, you know, Darlene, plus 7 at home, plus 4 on the road. You know, Alex Tuck was plus 13. He was even. Though actually the most consistent player on this club in terms of home road splits is Ryan McLeod. 22 points at home and plus 3, 28 on the road and plus 9. You just had wild ranging performances when they went out of town. And you saw so many games that we covered, 5 goals against, 6 goals against, 7 goals against. They weren't getting matchups. Some of that is coaching. Need to get better matchups on the road. They weren't able to do it enough, but they didn't get saves. They panicked a lot. You had a bunch of those 2 and 3 goal outbursts against them on the road. And, you know, to me, that really, you are never making the playoffs as well as they've been at home. They did win 22 home games going into this finale. The most they've won at home, fans should notice, since 2010. But if you're going to go 13-24-4 on the road, you're finished.
Yeah, there's so many layers to that problem, right? When it comes to the road, second periods were a massive issue in terms of their changes. Like their second periods at home weren't that great, but on the road, that problem really gets magnified. Too many non-competitive games, as you mentioned, and this past road trip, in my opinion, was a really sound example of the difference you're going to have home versus road. You know, in Columbus, Tage Thompson's line had to face Sean Monahan, who's an excellent defensive center. At home, Lindy Ruff is able to decide who does he want Tage Thompson to go up against. The same can be said for Owen Power and the way that he's deployed at home versus the road, which goes back to how you're building your lineup and making sure you have balance. When it comes to power splits, that is just once, as a general manager, you sit down at the start of your offseason, you try to identify what needs are at the top of your list. That is just another reason why you need to go out and get your veteran right shot defenseman to play with Owen Power and stabilize that situation and take a closer look at your lines and the options that you're giving your coach. To Lindy Ruff's credit, I think he's done a really sound job in terms of in-game adjustments, changing lines, trying to mix some groups around. You know, putting Zach Benson up with Kulik and Thompson has been a real boost in the last few weeks. He's got a feel for that, but he only has so many players to work with. So, you know, as much as we could sit here and say that most of their work is done up front, that you know who the vast majority of their forwards are going to be, Mike, but it would be advantageous, in my opinion, to go out and make sure you get another top 9 forward. You don't need to go get a first line guy or necessarily even a second line guy, but somebody who, you know, when you put them on the ice, they're not going to make careless decisions with the puck. And too often, when you have a lot, you know, some younger players, even JJ Paterka's incredibly talented offensively, but man, does he make a lot of mistakes with the puck, and that gets magnified on the road. You're seeing a lot more often. He made a couple of mistakes, I think, in each of those games that ended up biting the Sabres one way or another.
And you know what I say, you know, I talk about how, you know, it's a dessert buffet with all these turnovers, especially on the road. And you know, I joke about some of these plus minus figures, and you can do what you want with plus minus, of course. When you're plus nine at home and minus 22 on the road, like Owen Power, that's extreme. Extremes are what I want to see in plus minus. And that just speaks to the freak out factor of a young defenseman who needs a veteran next to him to stabilize things, not just on the ice, but on the bench when things get a little hairy, because people have to understand, you and I have been to every one of these arenas. Some of these places are just circuses to try to play in. It's really fun for you and I to go watch, but it's not fun to try to play in some of these places. It is not KeyBank Center. People do not understand how docile an environment KeyBank Center is until you go to some of these other places. When the noise started that night in Colorado, it was unbelievable. When the noise starts in a place like Winnipeg, it is unbelievable.
Edmonton.
You know, when these places get going, good luck. And they need veterans to stabilize. You're right. I would like to see one more veteran. I don't need this top six forward. They got plenty of offense. I need a Zucker, another Zucker type, just to keep things calm. I need more adults in the room and more adults on the ice.
I am going to pivot slightly from our initially planned itinerary here, Mike.
Don't wait months for new windows on your home. Express Windows can have them installed in just weeks with high-quality double-hung windows starting at only $359. Call Express Windows for a free at-home estimate or stop by our showroom on Delaware Avenue in Tonawanda.
We need to talk about Owen Power. He's got a significant injury, according to Lindy Ruff, or at least all signs point to this being significant. If anyone listening missed this, Owen Power Saturday in Florida, Carter Verhaeghe, not only did Carter Verhaeghe fall into Owen Power's right ankle, but he also fell into Owen Power's left knee. And then the left leg is the problem for Owen Power right now.
I was rooting for the right ankle. It's the left knee.
Yeah, and you see it. When you watch the replay, the knee, it ends up being the one that's a lot uglier and potentially problematic. He was wearing a brace in Tampa as a healthy scratch. Yeah. This is a significant storyline, or potentially significant storyline, Mike, because they need Owen Power to have a productive offseason, to get stronger, to continue to work on his defensive game. And this reminds me, this isn't a torn Achilles, so this isn't the exact same situation, but it reminds me of Jack Quinn's injury two summers ago, to where it impacted his summer training, not only for 1 year, Mike, but the second year as well. And it's a major setback for a guy in his development at this stage for Owen Power. So, you know, the Sabres have to be just crossing their fingers and hoping for the best, that they get as clean a bill of health as they can. He's, you know, the season's coming to an end. I think it's for the best that he not go to world championships right now. Just take a break, get into the gym if you can, and start working toward that. But they can't afford for this kid to miss a big chunk of the offseason.
Well, and we're going to get a big update on this thing, I think, Saturday when Kevin Adams talks, because Power is scheduled to be in New York on Thursday to get another look, to get another opinion. The Sabres are clearly, obviously, like anybody would be, hoping to avoid surgery. Adam said on his radio show this week, he does not impact whether it's surgery or not, that he will be impacted for training camp. But it does speak to how prepared will he be for training camp. You know, he may be there, but so is Quinn. And you just never know how much of your summer you lose. You never get back. We even saw Alex Tuck last year. Had some injury issues in the summer, and he was not the same player last year. He did not have a good summer going into camp. So Owen Power needs a big summer this year. He may not have the opportunity to have a big summer if he's laid up doing rehab on a knee. So the Sabres, first off, just want to get a definitive diagnosis here and see if he needs some sort of surgery on it, and then we'll see. But, yeah, that was tough to see that happen in, what was it, game 79 or 80 of a lost season. It's just one of those fluke things. But it could have long-range significance for this club as they build this roster going forward.
He had not missed a game this season. So for it to happen, game 79, that is a very tough break. Here's a hypothetical for you. If the information the Sabres receive from doctors tell them that Owen Power is likely to miss not a large chunk of the start of next season, but at least some of the start of next season. Would that influence your decision as a general manager on whether to extend Bowen Byram?
It could, absolutely. I mean, if you look at the defense right now, you're thinking to yourself, they've got Darlene, they've got Power, they've got to make a decision on Byram, they've got to go out and acquire another veteran. Well, now if Power's out of the picture, you probably have to, you know, go back to Byram with the big deal. And Byram's play this year has been solid at times, and other times it hasn't been. And it seems like he's been good with Darlene at times and struggled away from Darlene. He's been okay with Power. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out where Byram fits here. You know, is Byram gonna, can you really pay Byram $8 or $9 million? You know, and he's gonna say that based on the fact Power's making eight. Byram's already won a cup.
Probably, you know, you probably can't if you're the Sabres realist. And this is a conversation that we can have in future weeks, but I don't.
If Power's hurt and Power's out, there's either got to be a big acquisition from the outside, or you're just gonna have to suck it up and pay Bowen Byram right now.
Yeah, and even if it's not a big acquisition per se, you look at last summer where the Toronto, and this is, it's goofy to, or might come across as goofy to compare the two, but the Maple Leafs weren't able to go out and get a number one defenseman to run their top power play, but they got Oliver Ekman-Larsson, who's not going to be, you know, a Rasmus Dahlin for your top pair, but he's somebody you could put on a power play who's actually competent, you know, and when Power, you know, eventually returns from the injury, if he does miss time, then Power can get his spot back, and then you at least have depth in terms of another guy who could run a power play. So that would be the one scenario that if they don't keep Owen Byram, because I'm with you, I just don't see how you're not gonna be able to pay everybody. You know, Ryan McLeod's gonna get what? Are we talking $5 million a year? Alex Tuch's eligible for an extension July 1st, and if you're keeping Alex, that's gonna be a very expensive ticket, or you know he's earned it. And J.J. Paterka's an RFA, they're going to have to make a decision there as well. He doesn't have any leverage because he doesn't have arb rights, but in pro sports nowadays, you just never know. So
somebody might offer sheet him.
Yeah, and I know there's some good players in Rochester that fans are excited about, whether it's Komarov, Novikov. You know, there's still some Ryan Johnson truthers out there, but none of those three guys can be counted on to be the solution. As you stated, they need veterans. They need more experience on that back end. You know, I think that Kevin Adams did a nice job bringing in Jason Zucker and Ryan McLeod to supplement what he had up front. Now it's time again. Two summers ago, they got Clifton and Eric Johnson. Well, now you got to go back and you got to fix the decor. Now that you have Lindy Ruff as coach, you know what kind of attributes and characteristics and traits you need out of that group to succeed under Ruff. Well, now you got to go ahead and do that. All right. Next topic, Mike. Locker cleanout. It always used to be such a wild card with the players when guys like Ristolainen were around. You never knew what they were going to say. It was just, what bombshell are we going to face today? Well, we're not expecting that from any player this time around, of course. But Kevin Adams is going to talk on Saturday. And what do you want to hear from the GM? He's only spoken once since early December.
The first question is, have you lost your love for the game? The Ryan O'Reilly reference. You never knew what bombshells Jack Eichel would drop on us, and he dropped a few, including the famous disconnect about the injury on the Zoom call in May of the COVID year. But you never know, you know, what player might spout off, what player might say something. These guys tend to be pretty close to the vest. I'm not expecting it. The number one show here is going to be Kevin Adams. And, you know, there's a lot of questions to be asked and answered, right? All right, my skepticism meter is high, as it should be. 4:30 on a Saturday afternoon on Easter weekend. Are you talking trying to bury the news?
What are you talking about? Bury the GM? Accountability. We've heard the buzzword for months, right?
Wow. Yeah. Talk about hoping nobody sees this press conference. Holy mackerel. When I saw that time, I couldn't stop laughing. I'm like, you know what? You do locker cleanout. The season ends Thursday. The players talk Friday and Saturday. Kevin and Ruff should be talking on Monday. for Tuesday. Come on. Saturday at 4:30. That's a bunch of crap. I'm sorry. That just is. I don't care. I'll be there. I'll ask the questions anyway. But we know what that's all about. Okay. So now we've covered all that point. Kevin has spoken one time since Palm Trees and Taxes Day. He spoke to three of us in Florida the day of the trade deadline, myself, representative from the Athletic, representative from WGR. That's it. Lindy has talked every day, sometimes twice a day, for months.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to put Lindy and Kevin up on the stage together at the same time. So they're going to use Lindy as a little bit of a shield for Kevin. But this may have actually been Lindy's idea. Lindy did that with Darcy quite a bit. He spoke at the same time with Darcy at the end of season presser. And I think it did take some of the heat off of Darcy as the glare got a little brighter near the end there. Kevin needs to lay out whatever his plan is, because this was supposed to be the win or else year, and they didn't win, and they're still apparently not the or else. But with 1 year left on their respective contracts, this is going to be the win or else year coming up, assuming Kevin stays. But this isn't difficult to lay out a plan. You and I have just laid out the plan, what this team has to do. You know, we know what they have to do. They know what they have to do. Can they do it is the question. And then I want to hear some things. I want to hear the GM's opinion on Luukkonen in the first year of his long-term deal, where the Sabres goaltending really fell through the floor a lot of nights. You know, he's got some questions to answer here. He answered some of them already in Florida. He'll get them again. He admitted now a couple times publicly he screwed up during the 13-game winless streak, making no moves. No kidding. But now this is twice they've had a big losing streak in the last 3 years. He's made no moves. Is he going to adjust during the season? Because I can make the easy case that he's done pretty well in these recent off seasons. And the in-season moves have just been almost non-existent. And that is as important for the GM. The trade deadline is one thing, but he had to do something during that 13-game stretch in November. And they just sat there saying, we need one win. And it took him too long to get the one win.
Yeah, he's been GM for winless streaks of 18 games and 13 games. So as a general manager, you have to look at yourself in the mirror and say, what can I do differently to put a stop to these skids? And yeah, some of it is crisis management. Some of it is managing, you know, certain fires happen throughout the season. You know, it's been interesting to hear, you know, former GMs around the league, like Brian Burke has some amazing stories that he's told over the years about the situations that he's had to throw cold water on, you know, behind the scenes. That things happen throughout the year. And as a GM, you have to know how to handle them, whether that's a need to make a trade or how do I shake my group up, which goes back, Mike, to the decision that has been made over the last, well, since Kevin Adams' arrival nearly 5 years ago, to not have more experienced people in hockey operations. I'm sorry to beat a dead horse here, but look at what Craig Conroy has surrounded himself with in Calgary, a lot of experienced people, Minnesota with Bill Guerin. You can't do this on your own. Jason Carmanos, yes, he has some Stanley Cup rings from Carolina and Pittsburgh, but he's never been in that GM chair. So to me, the one thing that you would like to hear, or I'm curious to hear what Kevin Adams have to say, is there any interest in adding more experience to hockey ops? You know, they've got great people in an amateur scouting who are experienced. And Mike, for my opinion, that's why they've been pretty successful in terms of their drafting. You know, Jerry Fortin's been around a long time. They've got more experienced scouts like Kevin Devine and Graham Beamish. They don't have that when it comes to assistant GM. Sam Ventura worked in Pittsburgh, but never been a GM before. He's an analytics guy,
and we see where analytics has taken them at times.
And they tried to improve this situation by promoting Fortin to assistant GM last summer, but then he's not only handling amateur scouting, but you got him doing pro, and is that really an ideal setup? So who are you going to bring in? I mean, I go back to almost 5 years ago where Rick Dudley wanted to be part of the Sabres. He wanted to work with Kevin Adams, and there was a resistance from the Sabres to bring in somebody like that at that time. Dudley goes to the Florida Panthers. Well, and the rest is history. He's got a Stanley Cup ring at this point. So,
well, the other thing is they have no, like, look at all these other teams out there. Where are their ex-players to go into hockey ops?
Yeah.
The Sabres don't have any of their ex-players in hockey ops pretty much, because most of their ex-players don't feel welcomed. They feel like the door is shut to them for whatever reason, from Terry Pegula, from Kevin Adams. You hear all these ex-players chirping around at times. Some of them would have experience, would be interested, and none of them are involved. And I think that's also a problem, because even an ex-player who doesn't have management experience, they know what you need to build a hockey team.
Yeah.
And I don't think Kevin has the right people in his ear on the pro side to help him build this team as constructed. But it's just a weird concoction of management here. Guys whose resumes are very flimsy. You know, I've written about this before. Very flimsy resumes in the pro scouting department. And
how much experience? I mean, Craig Anderson's one of their pro scouts, but like, he's never been a scout before. You look at the other, they're more, right. I think their last three scouts that they've hired, none of them have been NHL scouts in the past.
Hired a college coach, and then the guy left. So I think
your last development coach hire, Zach Redmond. Yeah, a good AHL player, but
right,
no coaching experience. And some of the people that they've lost over the years, Michael Pekka is the first that comes to mind to me, Mike. You should have done everything you could to keep him in your building.
Well, and Laviolette's about to get fired. You should do everything to get Michael Pekka back and get him on this staff next year.
So my bigger point is, not only do I want to hear what Kevin Adams is going to do in terms of improving this roster this summer and have him reflect on what's gone wrong over the past few months, how he evaluates some of his own players, but what are you changing fundamentally in your organization to make sure that you build a winning culture, not only on the ice and in that dressing room, but there's a lot more that goes on in an organization other than just the players, to make sure that it's being run the right way. And, you know, as much as they've had some success with Rochester and drafting, like, you can't reinvent the wheel in the NHL, and too much with some of the decisions that have been made in terms of development and bringing guys up too soon, you're trying to reinvent the wheel, and well, it's not working out for you so well. So what are you going to do to reflect and make sure none of this happens again? It's interesting. Well,
I agree with you. I just think I want to hear the plan. What is the plan is the question we have gone over and over and around about for years. And I want to see what differences they have to offer. I don't know if there'll be any, but it's going to be interesting, even though it's 4:30 on a Saturday.
There were too many excuses made in the December press conference. It was much better at the deadline, where you didn't hear as much of that. You heard, you know, self-reflection. So last topic, Mike. This might be a little painful for some of our listeners to get through, but the Toronto Maple Leafs look like they're actually a pretty good team, huh? These aren't the same Sheldon Keefe coach Maple Leafs that got into track meets and traded chances. No, like, Craig Berube's got them playing a brand of hockey that may actually lead to some success in the playoffs.
Well, it's a little commercial here. I'm going to write about that in my Inside the NHL column, Sunday's paper. Is this the year the Toronto Maple Leafs wipe out 1967 and finally get that Stanley Cup? I don't know if they can get the route here. I certainly have some concerns about them playing the Tampa Bay Lightning in the second round or the Florida Panthers in the second round. But what we saw the other night at KeyBank Center was even an improvement from the two games we saw in December. There is no more fire wagon hockey with the Toronto Maple Leafs. They played a patient style. They played a chess game. Anthony Stolarz is red hot in goal. The defense is pretty strong, even with a couple guys out injured. Ekman Larson and Jake McCabe weren't on the ice against the Sabres on Tuesday. The forwards don't cheat. Mitch Marner, 100-point Mitch Marner, is probably one of your top five Selke guys this year. They're deep up front. They're key guys who've gone through a lot of these wars the last few years or mature now. I mean, Austin Matthews is in his ninth year. Marner's in his 10th year. They are set up. They've won the Atlantic Division. They won a division for the first time since 2000. They are set up as one of the seven or eight teams, in my mind, that can win the Stanley Cup. I don't believe anybody in the Metropolitan Division can win the Stanley Cup. I think the Stanley Cup finalist again for, it could be, what, the sixth or seventh straight year, is going to come out of the Atlantic Division. It's going to be the Leafs or Florida or Tampa Bay in the Stanley Cup final. And there's been a lot of cup champions and a lot of finalists out of the Sabres division in recent years. And I think the Leafs can get there. They have two goalies who've won 20 games, Stolarz and Joseph Woll. And the biggest thing about the Leafs, Craig Berube has got these guys playing his style. It won a Stanley Cup in St. Louis in 2019. It's a better style than Sheldon Keefe had them playing. And Craig Berube is the difference here. He's got their ear. They understand how they need to play to win, which is what the Sabres are trying to figure out with Lindy Ruff. And strike me down. Strike me down, Lance. Yes, the Toronto Maple Leafs can win the Stanley Cup this year. It can happen.
Brad Treliving also deserves a ton of credit for what he's done to that blue line. Kyle Dubas, it took him too long to make proper improvements to their decor. It was a real weakness. Treliving brought in not only Christopher Tanev, but Brandon Carlo. And
Tanev, Carlo.
Dubas got McCabe, and that's been a great fit for both sides. But those two guys in particular, Tanev and Carlo, you see the way they complement what else they have on the back end. Stolarz, I can't believe that. I mean, he's had two good years in a row, but we'll see how he handles the playoff last year. Yeah. Yeah. Let's see how he handles a playoff workload. He looked great against Buffalo. He's looked great every time I've watched him this season. So I'll put you on the spot. So it's down to those three teams that you mentioned in the Atlantic. Is Toronto still your pick to go to the Cup final? Yeah, it's a tough one because Tampa Bay looks great. Florida's kind of a wild card with all their injuries.
I'm down on Florida. I just think they're banged up. They're load managing guys out of the lineup right now. You don't know who's hurt, who's healthy, if Matthew Tkachuk can play much. I really think it's going to be Toronto or Tampa, and I think the team that's going to be in the Stanley Cup final out of the West is the Vegas Golden Knights. I think they're the most complete team. I think they have the weapons. They're healthier than they've been in other years. I think they've got enough goaltending. The defense is terrific. Eichel's having, to me, his best year by a lot, two-way hockey. I like them better than Dallas, who's really struggling. I just like them better than Colorado. Edmonton's beat up. I don't think Edmonton is close to what they were last year. I think it's going to be Vegas in the West. And I really think it's going to be Toronto or Tampa out of the East.
Yeah, I'm going to pick Tampa. I'm going to pay Tampa and Colorado. Those are going to be my two picks. It's going to be interesting because that first round series. 2022
rematch.
The first round series between the Avs and the Stars is going to be intense. Just Dallas has too many injuries right now. Their back end's been really banged up. You know, we'll see about Jake Ottinger if he could steal a series for them. I just really like what Colorado did at the deadline. And Tampa, Kucherov, Point, Gensel, Shirelli, they're pretty deep, and they've got a pretty good goalie as well. So, well, Mike, we're gonna have a lot to talk about next week to recap what's said by Kevin Adams and, you know, a little less so Lindy Ruff since we talk to him every day, but still plenty to cover. Thank you everybody for following along from start to finish this season. It's been a long one in a lot of different ways, but it's been really interesting. There's never a dull moment when it comes to this team, Mike. So we'll see where it goes next. He's Mike Harrington. I'm Lance Lysowski. This is Ice Time, the Buffalo News Hockey Podcast. Thank you for joining us and take care.
Express Windows is a best of 716 favorite for window and door installation. They also offer discounts for military personnel and seniors. Learn more at expresswindowsinc.com. Express Windows. Fast, easy, affordable.